Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And very pleased to be joined now by the head basketball coach at George Mason University, Dave Paulson. Dave, congratulations on the move.
Thank you, Steve. It's a great feeling, and it's a bittersweet feeling. You know, it's a tremendous opportunity to take over at Mason, you know, tradition-rich programs, made a run of the Final Four, plays in one of the best basketball conferences in America. But it's bittersweet to leave my guys at Bucknell and Lewisburg and all the people who have been so supportive to our program and to our family every step of the way.
As you make the move and you look back at what you did at Bucknell, how proud are you by what you accomplished and the foundation that you've left?
Well, you know, I'm just proud because more than anything, the best thing we had was we had some of the very, very best representatives of the country on the floor in terms of the character of the young men I was fortunate enough to coach. And through great seasons or maybe seasons that weren't as successful, they always really played extremely hard, were very coachable, and represented themselves well. So, you know, that's the first thing. And obviously we had a good amount of success, but that goes to the territory of Bucknell. You know, Bucknell is a great job. It's set up for success. There's a lot of support there. And I was happy, you know, really, I think when I got hired, a lot of people were like, hey, you're inheriting some pretty big shoes. Don't screw it up. And hopefully, at the minimum, these people say he didn't screw it up too bad.
What made George Mason appealing to you?
Well, I think the tradition, you know, what they've been able to accomplish in 2006, going to the Final Four, you know, under Jim Larrañaga, a couple other NCAA tournaments after that. They've certainly fallen on harder times in the last few years. But I think the potential, you know, there's great potential here. And much like what I found out when I researched and found out about Bucknell, there's great passion to have a successful basketball program here.
All right. Now the next part. When you take a job and you change conferences and perceive to be changed a level into the mid-major level, what does that do in terms of your recruiting list as to opening the door to recruiting different players and the adjustment that you and your staff have to make to a new list?
Yeah, you know, now the first few guys I called last night were guys on my list at Bucknell who were like, boy, if we could get one of these guys, these guys are program makers. And, you know, at this time of year, traditionally at Bucknell, we were calling guys that a lot of times we didn't get, you know, that ended up going to quote-unquote higher level. You know, I think you can make the argument there is no higher level than us now. You know, and obviously the Atlantic 10 is a team. It's a multi-bid league. Teams from the Atlantic 10, George Mason, VCU, have gone to Final Fours. So, now certainly there's a perception that you're not a Power 5 conference, but I think you can go toe-to-toe with anyone. The interesting thing will be to figure out there was a certain niche, there was a certain cell that was attractive to kids at Bucknell. I think the learning curve is, you know, what are the key selling points at George Mason? Who are the guys we can get? You know, what types of young men and families and high school coaches does this cell resonate with? And that's the first thing. And the second thing is, you know, learning, hey, where not to waste your time. And so I think there's a learning curve anytime you change schools and jobs, figuring out, you know, what's going to be your pitch. And who's it going to most resonate with?
You chose basketball coaching as your profession. You've now lived it for a long time. What is it about coaching basketball or being a basketball coach that drives you and allows you to love your job on an everyday basis?
Well, I think the first thing is you got to love the kids, and you got to love watching them grow and develop and getting to know them. And the hardest thing that I had to do was walk in the locker room on Monday afternoon at 5 and say goodbye to those kids. And one of the things that I literally just came up for air is having individual meetings with every one of our guys here at George Mason and trying to get to know them and forge relationships. And, you know, you got to have some trust. They got to know how much you care before they care how much you know. And so that's the most important thing we do. At the end of the day, we're not solving world hunger. And we're not going to balance the budget in the Capitol Hill. You know, it's I think what happens when young men grow through the experience of intercollegiate athletics, learn some skills that, quite frankly, are more transferable and more valuable than anything they might learn in a classroom.
What about now the fact you have to learn a lot of new opponents? I mean, obviously, at Bucknell, you scheduled really well. You scheduled really well. But there's going to be some opponents you're going to have to play now a couple times a year that maybe you haven't seen for a while. What's the learning curve like that in the off season? Because, you know, between now and the start of the season, it's one big learning curve.
Right. You know, it just gets accelerated. This is a great league, and it's a great coaching league. And that's exciting, but it's also a little bit daunting. And, you know, typically what we would do if I was still at Bucknell, you pretty much know the key things that teams like to do in our league. And you know the actions that you have to spend more time on guarding. So there's a learning curve. You know, there were teams in our league like Army and American, and I would guess now Holy Cross with the system that Bill Carmody put in. You knew what to expect, so we spent more time working that kind of stuff than maybe what we're going to have in the Atlantic 10. And I got to figure out, you know, every league to some degree takes on a character of its own, and
exactly.
That's going to be off-season film study to figure out what are the key ingredients that you really have to be able to do to have success.
Something I never talked to you about, Dave, in all this time, but I'll talk to you about it now. And that's about Patrick Chambers. You've known him for a long time. You also know what the Penn State job is like. How do you, as a fellow coach who understands him and understands the job, does Penn State have the right fit with the right guy?
I think absolutely, unequivocally, yes. Without a doubt, I am a huge Patrick Chambers fan. One of my 285 unreturned text messages is from Pat. I have developed a great friendship and relationship with him, and that's not why I'm saying it. I think, you know, the Penn State job is a great job, but it's a hard job, would be my layman's evaluation of it. It needed a lot of energy, and Pat's provided that. You know, I think there was a time there when they were really struggling there. They really made a great run at the end of the year, which was great. He's recruited exceptionally well. The group of guys that he has committed to come in next year and then the year after even, I think he's got one in there, is great. Now, you can send a message to him that he kind of came into the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area to get a couple guys, and that's going to end. Okay, so you can send them up. As much as I like them, we're putting a sign, we're going to put an X through his face on a milk carton and make sure that people know he's not allowed at the DMV anymore.
I will let him know you mentioned that. The other part, I want to ask, George Mason talked about what they did a few years ago and what Jim Larrañaga did in particular. Yeah, the Patriot Center, for example, and I've done a couple games in that building. I like it. Do you feel good about facilities and also commitment at the university to what you want to do?
Yeah, I really do. They really want to be good. They really want to win. I really love the president when I met with him. And, you know, I think, at least initially, I'm undefeated right now. We had a good bond. I think it's a great facility. I think they need to make some upgrades, and I think those are in the plans. And you know, there's always going from the Colonial Athletic Association to the Atlantic 10, a learning curve, I think, for the administration in terms of cost of doing business at that level, and they've already made some adjustments. So, you know, I don't know everything yet. It's I can find my way from the hotel I'm staying at to my office. And I was able to find a couple of Diet Mountain Dews along the way, so that's about all I know right now. But there'll be a big learning curve for me, but that's exciting and invigorating as well.
Dave, they're very lucky to have you, and you'll do a tremendous job there. I'm completely confident of that. You're one of the best. Thanks a lot for all the time that you gave us in your tenure at Bucknell. It was greatly appreciated, and I enjoyed all the talks we always had.
Hey, Steve, I enjoyed it. I always look forward to the Monday call, and I appreciate your support and obviously all the listeners and all the great fans who support our teams over the years, and they're going to have some really good teams down the road, too. So thanks so much.
And Coach, Coach, thanks again for making my text one of the texts that you were able to respond to. That means a lot. And doing a couple of games with you over the years has been a ball. And I was so happy when we won that last one and that you were able to let me do more games then after that.
Yeah, absolutely. But we're not going to let you do any games out here, Kevin.
Oh, come on.
I can't have a 1-2 record. All right.
Well, Dave, now you know I feel every day.
Best of luck,
thanks,
Coach.
Dave. Take care, guys.
Good
thanks.
Luck. Bye. Thanks. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles. There should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915. Tomorrow we'll have on Matt LePay, the play-by-play voice of Wisconsin basketball, and Will Team in the play-by-play voice of Michigan State basketball to preview the games. Michigan State and Duke will be the opening game at 6:09 Saturday night. The nightcap at 8:49 will be Kentucky and Wisconsin. And the games will be on TBS this time. Well, TBS to a point. True TV and the Turner family, by the way, is going to have the home team broadcasts on, which they did last year for the first time. I think, for example, I believe Wayne Larrabee and Mike Kelly are the Wisconsin broadcasts. And, of course, we've had Wayne on the show before. I don't know if we've had Mike on. I've known Mike for a long time. I don't think we've ever had Mike on the show. Mike, I'll tell you, you want to talk about a guy who could play defense in college basketball? Mike Kelly was a great defender. Whew. You know, when I look at great defenders in the Big Ten, you know, I look at Chris Kramer, I look at Mike Kelly, among two of the best that I ever saw play defense at guard in the conference. And then a guy named Dan Baker, I think, is doing the Kentucky broadcast. I mean, they've got it all spread out. Brian Anderson is doing, with Mateen Cleaves, is doing the Michigan State broadcast. And I don't know, I'm not sure doing the Duke broadcast, but you actually have that option of watching it if you want.
So they're going to run, so you could listen to the Duke broadcast on one channel, and then mm-hmm. on another channel, Michigan State broadcast?
Yeah.
So there, then, is that the TBS TNT? Is that what they're doing it, or is it a different way?
In True TV.
True TV, okay.
Right. And
I forget, you did mention that.
And TBS has Jim Nantz, Grant Hill, and Bill Raftery.
That's interesting.
Organize the puppies. get those puppies organized.
That's interesting.
They did this last year. And I remember last year, a couple of people complain, I can't believe I'm watching this. It's so biased against my team. Right? And Charles Barkley said, are you people idiots?
You people are terrible. You people are terrible. You should know that by now.
It was great. Because as usual, we had the usual group out there complaining about what, because there's a group out there complains about everything. Okay, they complain about everything. And so there were some people that complained last year. I can't believe how prejudiced they were against my, you know, they just kept talking about how great Wisconsin was. Blah, blah, blah. And Charles Barkley, he said, are you nuts? Oh,
so now give me the rundown again, because I'm confused. I want to make sure I get the right channel. So they're going to do, they're using TBS, TNT, True TV, and yeah, CBS?
No, CBS is not doing
okay, it. So it's just four. Or just three networks. Out. Okay. All right.
Yeah, CBS is out. Bob Knight, by the way, does his last ESPN game tonight.
Yeah, I heard he was leaving ESPN. After what? Was it 8 years? 10 years?
Yeah, but you know what? He never gave you the feeling that he was engaged in what was going on. There's so much tremendous basketball knowledge there, you know, and sometimes you can't translate it into words, or sometimes you can't translate it into a concise moment. And that's moments I thought he did fine, and other moments he gave you the impression he was bored. He may not have been, but he gave you that impression. The Gino Auriemma comments on men's basketball, drawing a lot. Dick Vitale, admire and respect Coach Auriemma, that was a real cheap shot ripping the men's game. A joke. Give me a break, Gino. Okay. Then there's been a lot of talk about whether Gino Auriemma, for example, could coach men's basketball. He could coach men's basketball. He'd be fine. He'd be able to recruit. He could recruit. But the difference between him recruiting in the men's game versus the women's game is quite simple. In the women's game, it is really a perception, which I think is actually which is reality. He can get anybody he wants. If he really wants a player, he can get that player. I would say the list of players that he's lost, now he's been on this run since 1995, is probably a very small list. The difference would be in the men's game. He would get his, but the problem he would have was that, well, Krzyzewski would also get his, and Calipari would get his, and Izzo would get his, and Bo would get his. And see, and there would be people around there getting theirs as well. That would be the problem he would face. It would be a great challenge for him because of that. But that is different, because instead of being the one that gets almost everybody you really want, that you really zero in and target, unless you have more talent than everybody else. And I've really been conflicted over time about whether UConn is good or bad for the women's game. I think in two areas they're good. And the two areas they're good is that they play a great brand of basketball, and it's entertaining to watch. Fundamentally sound, and they'll bring eyeballs to the set because of UConn women's basketball. That's one positive. Number two, I think they also do a great job of setting a bar that's really high, that if you want to jump in and really try to go after, that's something worthy of going after to make your program better, and will there be other programs that can get themselves to that level? Now here's where they're bad for the game. When you're in the NCAA tournament in the Sweet 16 and you take Texas and you run them out of the building, and you win some of your regular season games 80 or 90 to 30-something, which they did, Is that good for the game? Does that make you want to say, I can't wait to watch that? So there are a couple areas where I think they're good for the game. There are a couple areas where I think they're bad for the game. Let's see. Yeah, Rex Chapman's going to be part of the broadcast team for Kentucky. That kind of brought with it a little couple of issues because he was arrested for allegedly shoplifting $14,000 worth of products from an Apple store. But you see what I'm saying about the... Now, Oriam is talking about the pure entertainment of the game. And I can see where he's coming from with the pure entertainment of the game. You know, we all... remember I pointed out Georgia State had that great upset? They beat Baylor. Well, you know how Georgia State got into the tournament, right? They won their conference. I think they won the Southern Conference. You know what the final score of that game was? 38-36 over Georgia Southern. Tom Wormy will do the play-by-play of Duke. Ala Abdelnaby is the analyst. Michigan State's Brian Anderson, Mateen Cleaves. Dave Baker and Rex Chapman, Kentucky. Wayne Larrabee, Mike Kelly will be on Wisconsin. And Wisconsin will be on True TV. And Kentucky will be on TNT.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin has one more day to drive this gray vehicle.
Yeah, I've been driving the 2015 Ford Fiesta SE. And the SE has the 6.5-inch screen in front, touchscreen capabilities for the radio and the Ford MySync as well. And if you step up to the Titanium Series, you'll get a rear-view camera, reverse park sensing, as well as the 8-speaker 100-watt Sony system. It's also available in a 5-speed manual transmission as well as a 3-cylinder 1-liter that is going to save you even more money with the Ford EcoBoost engine at the pump, especially. Average gas mileage in the low 30s and close to 40 if you get on the highway. And it has a lot of the features you would expect for a vehicle priced well over 20. The SE model that we're talking about this week, priced at under 18, or just about 18, I should say. Check it out at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. You can see it on their website, sunburymotors.com. You can also find it on my Facebook page. And if you follow me at Kevin Herr on Twitter, we'll link you right up to it.
Interesting interview that took place last week. Toby Rowland is a host of a talk show in Norman, Oklahoma. I've been on Toby Rowland's show before. Toby's very, very good at what he does. Very good. And it's on Sports Talk 1400 in Norman, Oklahoma. Last week, he had Vern Lundquist on the show. And he had some... Vern Lundquist has never been shy about... You know, he said he referred to Dick Vitale last year as an acquired taste. Said two young announcers he really likes are Ian Eagle and Dan Shulman. Well, this year, he was asked about the parting of ways with Bill Radford because Radford got moved up to the number one team. So he's asked about, and by the way, Jim Spurnuckle did a really nice job with Vern Lundquist. They worked well together. Jim Spurnuckle's always very, very good. On not working with Radford this year, Lundquist said, circumstances dictated the decisions that were made. I don't necessarily agree with the decisions because it directly affected me. I became collateral damage for Greg Anthony's inability to act properly. That's a nice way of putting it, I guess. Next, on Rafferty's promotion to work with Jim Nantz. I've got very bittersweet emotions about it because I'm thrilled for Bill. I think that he should have been in the top spot 20 years ago. I agree with that. I would like to have joined him, but that's not going to happen because Jim Nantz is by contract the lead guy on this. We all know that. It's not, gosh, I wish they would have promoted me. I knew they wouldn't. And then there was this one. On scripting dramatic calls. I'll share with you something I find amusing. One of those moments was the Tiger chip in 2005 when the ball dropped in the cup after it sat on the hole for 1.8 seconds. And I said, in your life, have you ever seen anything like that? Well, I hadn't. And that was just me responding to the moment. And I had a guy call me, a newspaper man, the next day. He said, did you plan that? You know, I couldn't go to sleep that night. Last night, so I thought, if Tiger comes to the 16th with a one-shot lead and he pulls an 8-iron long left and then is 90 feet from the hole above the cup and it sits on the hole for 1.8 seconds, I think I should say, in your life, have you ever seen anything like that? And I know what you mean. We all know. We all do. And that particular person does script moments, and they sound like it. Ooh. How about that one?
Yeah, the last comment was interesting.
Oh yes.
That's all right. I like Vern Lundquist and Happy Gilmore.
Well, no. Look, he's been around the ball. He is one of the nicest, loyal guys that you'll ever meet in your lifetime. He is funny. He has a laugh that gets the room going. He's just a great guy to be around. Met him through Todd Blackledge. Because he and Todd Blackledge worked together for a long time on CBS and the SEC. Vern Lundquist is legitimately a great guy. And he's an outstanding broadcaster. He has had a phenomenal career. Whether it's the Cowboys or CBS on golf or CBS on football. SEC, obviously the college basketball tournament, he's tremendous. He's always been good. And I'll be honest with you, when it comes to calls, scripted calls, that you know how I feel about that.
Yes, I do. Absolutely do. We've talked about that many times.
And look, and when you've done what I've had the good fortune of doing, it would be a temptation to do it. Because while you can't script the ball hanging there for 1.8 seconds, I was with Joe Paterno one time when he was talking to Phil Knight, and he looked at Phil Knight and he said, well, could you have scripted that any better? That old Nike swoosh just hanging out there. And but you know what? When you do a game where you know he could break Bear Bryant's record, when you do a game where you know he can get his 400th win, when you know you're going to do a game where he's going to pass out Eddie Robinson, when you go into a game where you know they can win the Big Ten championship, or in basketball they can get to the Sweet 16 or whatever, or win the NIT championship like they did 6 years ago today, there is a temptation to sit there and say, you know what, I've never had that temptation. But you do know that something could happen that day that would be specific to that. And as you know, I refuse to do it. It's not even a thought that runs through my mind. If the call is mediocre and stinks, the call is mediocre and it stinks. It's just the way it goes. But if the call's really good, it sticks with people for a long time.
I don't worry about the endings. I only worry about the openings.
Yeah, we know. And you script that.
Yes. I freely admit that. And if I don't script it verbatim, I'll have like points that I want to emphasize.
I'm not critical of that. You know that.
Oh no, I'm not. And that wasn't my point. But my point is doing an open to set the scene the way you want to set it is different than scripting an ending to something that hasn't happened. I mean, I'm trying to set a script. I mean, we've joked about it many times, and I want to set a particular setting as the broadcast starts. If you script the end of it, you're planning for something to happen, and it ends up not sounding natural, and it ends up not sounding spontaneous. And I think those are those are what makes a call legendary, is the spontaneous sound of it.
We want to know the point where, you know, because this has been talked about with Jim Nance before. If we ever have him on the show, I'm not going to bother asking him about it. I think that would be rude. But, you know, the point where I think he broke away from it? Remember when Hayward took the shot from midcourt for Butler? And it almost went in? You could tell. It shocked him. And all this genuine emotion came out of him when the ball almost went in. Butler missed winning the national championship by a hair. That ending was not scripted, and that's one of the best ones he's done. I also think, I'll tell you straight out, I think Jim Nance has had an excellent NCAA tournament. I think he's had an excellent turn. I think this is some of the best work I've heard him do on college basketball. I think he sounded great.
I just wish they'd find him a new partner for football.
Oh, Phil Simms?
Not a Phil Simms fan.
No, a lot of people aren't. A lot of people are not. And it does get, we talk about other people or whatever. It gets to the point where I really care about the people I work with. I mean, that's their problem. Just don't take Jack Hamm or Dick Girardi away from me. I'd rather have that than. That's just me.
Who's Nance working with for the Masters?
Nick Faldo.
That's right. For some reason, I thought Faldo was NBC.
No.
I like Nick Faldo.
No, you know what's interesting about Nick Faldo? He's completely different as a broadcaster as he was as a player.
Yeah, he's still matter of fact, though, but I like that about him.
No, not matter. He's got some personality. I think he's got a good sense of humor to go with a lot of knowledge. And he'll tell you good one, bad one. He'll tell you straight out, good one, bad one, you know, not working, don't understand why they did that. But he also has a sense of humor. He's not flat. Not in the least. I think Nick Faldo does, you know, really... As a player, he kind of was like, he didn't give you that warm and fuzzy feeling. But he does this, and you can tell he's...
I didn't like
actually
Miller.
Actually seems to like it.
I didn't like Miller early on, and I think he was with NBC. But I liked him later on better.
Well, he's directly honest about what's going on. He irritates the players a lot. Do I think The one thing about him is that he makes the game, he gives you the impression the game's actually kind of easy. And that's why he's critical of these players. Why aren't they making these shots? Well, the game's not easy. The game were easy, you would be a single-digit handicap.
Well, we both but know that that's not happening.
But instead, I told the story to my group today about you hitting a railing at the golf course. I did. Oh, it was great. Went over huge.
I'm so glad I could be helping you out there.
No, but I don't understand how he can make that shot. Why could you miss hit it? Everybody miss hits it. You watch the pros. Not everything's down the middle. It's their ability many times to come out of the bunker, be within 3 feet. Okay? Get around the green, chip one, get within 2 feet, or maybe even put it in the hole. Their ability to drive the ball and you're in a bad spot, then make a shot. And, you know, they get in trouble all the time because the game's not easy. I've told you the story about Tommy Armour III. I'm at the Greater Hartford Open, 10th hole. I was just walking the course, and it just turns out I'm on the 10th hole, and I'm midway through. And Tommy Armour III slices the ball off the tee and into a bush. When I mean he's in the bush, I don't mean he's underneath the bush. The ball is 18 inches above the ground in the bush. So he comes out, and he looks at it. You know, we're all just standing there. I mean, there weren't many of us. There was like, what? 5-10 of us standing there. No offense, Tommy Armour III doesn't have what you call a gallery following him. And he gets out, walks in the fairway, comes back, talks to his caddy, goes out, fairway, comes back, finally takes a club, strikes the ball in the bush, hits a slice at about 180 yards, goes all the way up and around, hits in front of the green, rolls up 20 feet from the cup. There's no way in the planet any of us would do that. But it draws to 2 points. Number one, the game isn't easy because you do get in trouble, but what makes them great is their ability to get out of trouble. And number two, what I've talked about many times on this show, we watch TV and we see the great ones make it look so easy. Winning is difficult. Playing at a high level is difficult. It's hard to do. So whenever I hear somebody say, he stinks, no, they don't stink. They just are not as good as that guy over there. He stinks. Well, he's just not Derek Jeter. He stinks. Nah, he's just not as good as Tiger Woods. They don't stink. Okay. You and I on the weekend, there are moments where we stink.
And during the week and on holidays.
I'm saying, but there's a moment. But they get in trouble, too. And that's something a lot, you know, and you watch a golfer. And I think for Johnny Miller, I mean, that's an easy shot for a pro. Well, obviously it's not an easy shot for the pro. If they're all easy shots for the pro, they'd all be 25 under par right now.
That's a good point.
Hey, well, they aren't. A couple guys are right in the thick of this, and he'll talk about, you know, about sweaty palms, and they're, you know, always insinuating that somebody might be choking or whatever. It's like, you know, game's hard enough. That's what makes winning so gratifying. It's not easy. That's why I appreciate greatness when I see it. Because greatness is not easy. And that's why I admire Kevin so much. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome. Great to have you back. And does anybody realize that the Major League Baseball season begins Sunday night?
Yeah, I keep getting a countdown from the Phillies telling me how many days till opening day.
Well, I'll tell you, it's amazing that this season, it's coming up, has flown unbelievably under the radar. And it's not there. It's not there. And I have found that this has been the... And this has nothing... This is not really, Kev, to do with the Phillies not being great. Nothing to do with that. I think it's just in general.
Well, the other thing I wonder, too, and part of my problem is the Phillies are not going to be not even... I wouldn't even... Good. Good might be a term that you can't even use. But I wonder if because of the fact that the weather here in the Northeast has been so cold and miserable, nobody's thinking about doing anything outside, especially going to a baseball game. And I wonder if that maybe has a little bit to do with the lack of enthusiasm for the Major League Baseball season.
Could be, but...
I mean, when it's nice and warm and it's 60 degrees and the sun's shining, I think about, man, I wouldn't mind going to see a baseball game. But when we're getting 7 inches of snow on the end of March, I'm thinking, spring training? No, I'll wait till July before I go to a game. It'll warm up. I think that has something to do with it. But I also think that baseball lost its America's pastime image a long time ago.
Oh, there's no question it did. I mean, there's no question it did. I mean, football replaced baseball a long, long time ago.
I would love to see the USFL get a spring season going for football.
Well, we'll see. I'm in studio with you tomorrow. Aren't you excited?
I can't tell you how excited I am that you're going to join me here in the Sunbury Motor Studio East.